Welcome to the Business Isn't Usual podcast by Ryway. I'm your host, Stuart Wilkinson, and Happy New Year. I hope everyone had a great break after a challenging 2020. But going into 2021, we're very aware that after some time at the beach and time away from the business, people might have reset their goals and looked at what they need to achieve in this 2021 year. So that does mean change. Now, change can often seem an intimidating word, but we're now in an environment, I guess, despite COVID, that is a fast changing place with technology coming in that changes part of, I guess, the DNA of any organization moving forward. So we thought we'd get an expert on to speak about this topic, thinking about gearing up business owners for 2021. So we've connected with Bill Kirst. Bill's actually based in the States in Seattle, and he is an organization change consultant at West Monroe, a large consulting firm based in the States. Bill's worked at organizations like the University of Washington, IBM before, all in change management roles. And Bill works with clients now in that change process of all sizes. This was a really good podcast to catch up with Bill on. And we talked about things like, how do we make change process successful? How do you take your team on board? How do you make sure you achieve the goals you originally set out? Like, lots of really practical advice. We do talk a lot about at the start about COVID for Bill, and obviously the fact that States has been affected more than I guess New Zealand has, and how business owners have dealt with that in Seattle and in the States. Bill has his own podcast, Coffee and Change, which you can get on Spotify and all the normal channels. We'll put the links below. And that's, I guess, interviews with people that are involved in change processes across a number of different parts of community, business, which is really interesting and got some great advice. So we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure, if you do, please subscribe where you're listening to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc. And just check out all the Rightway social media channels to keep up to date with all the content from Rightway. Bill, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Stuart. Hope you're having a good day. Appreciate the invite.
Yes, it's great to have you on, and you're our first international guest on the podcast. So this is, don't want to set the bar too high, but you know, this is big. This is the big time.
I appreciate that. All the way from Seattle to Auckland. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. So look, Bill, we obviously connected, and that was over your expertise around change management. And look, for the reason I thought it would be good to get you on, and it may be some thought provoking stuff for people to listen to over the Christmas break while they're sort of at the beach or whatever, is we've gone through a whole year where we've probably, you know, never seen the amount of change in business that we have over the last 12 months. But, you know, there's no doubt the States are still going through a big period of change, and obviously the adversity that COVID's still playing there. So, you know, what's the experience you've had, I guess, around COVID, but what's also the experiences of the businesses that you've dealt with, and, you know, how have they dealt with the uncertainty and the decisions that just can change business overnight?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, you know, we're now, I think, month 10 going into about 11 of this here in the United States. And, you know, even as we're talking now, Stuart, I believe last night, California, most of California, about 85% of Californians went into lockdown again. And to give people an idea, you know, California is the seventh largest economy in the world. I mean, that's no small impact. So when you think about what the change that I think everyone around the world has gone through, and then you think about these sort of the past year and where people have had to make such life-changing decisions for businesses, for families, for communities. It's really something I wouldn't even say it's on the top of everyone's mind. I would actually say it's now embodied, right? Like, we kind of feel it on like an embodied level, on a cellular level. We carry the stress, we carry the anxiety, but we also carry the resilience. And I know this is something that you've talked a lot about in previous episodes, is resilience. And that's a word that I've talked a lot about this year with a lot of my clients, a lot of businesses. You know, I have the honor and the privilege of getting to support people going through change in their lives. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing this work in the realm of change management now for about 17, 18 years. And it's fascinating looking back on almost two decades of change. But I will say that this is by far the biggest, most significant, most amount of complex change that's come down on people in the shortest amount of time. And so when I think about the businesses that I've had the opportunity to work with, I remind myself that essentially what businesses are a collection of people, and they're essentially a living, breathing culture, very much like a family. So when I approach organizations and businesses and try and help them through change, I essentially just remember that it's a collection of people. And the best way to help a collection of people is truly understand how you help a person. So trying to keep it very approachable, very personal, help people, you know, be seen, heard, and believed in amidst this change is really, really important. And when you think about the enormity of everything that we're going through, be it policy, procedure, finance, taxes, all of these considerations that a lot of your listeners and small business owners are taking on, it can seem pretty enormous. And I think that's why it's important to approach people where they're at, frankly, and understand that, yes, we will be making business decisions. But more importantly, I think people need to stop and look at kind of who they are as an individual in this change, as a leader in this change, as a community, as a citizen, and also as a business owner, and to understand that all of those things are not mutually exclusive. Oftentimes, they're quite complementary.
Yeah. It's not like you can just wear one hat one day and then go, oh, okay, I'll go and put this other hat. Like, it's, you are everything. And I suppose, and you talked about the word adversity that we've all faced and through this, and the resilience that's done. But I know, Bill, I've seen a lot on your LinkedIn that the sort of the mental side of that weight, that especially, you know, if you're the top of the tree as a business owner, having to make decisions around, you know, your people, staff, the kind of things that could affect customers, then your family, because the output of business obviously affects your family. What have you seen is support mechanisms that have been really important for your clients or business owners that are going through what is a pretty stressful time? Like, it's all great going, hey, we're resilient, but that can only get us that can get a bit dangerous if we go don't actually have the conversation of, are you okay?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think you may have seen some of the things that have been posted a lot out there. I do post a lot of things around mental wellness and mental health and well-being. And I think it's important to remember that a lot of what's coming at people, frankly, it's putting us at a level of anxiety and uncertainty and adversity that we've never really encountered before at this saturation level. So it's important for people to give themselves permission to just state and name, I'm overwhelmed, or I need some help. And so some of this is, for me, it's about giving leaders permission to say, I'm not expected to figure it out alone. And you're right, when you're at the top of the tree, it's lonely. Like, leadership is a lonely experience. Oftentimes when it's really great, it's really great. And when it's really challenging, it's really tough. So I oftentimes remind leaders in positions that you don't have to go it alone. There are a lot of peers that people can reach out to. You know, every CIO or CFO probably has another C-suite officer that they could pick up the phone and call and say, how are you figuring this out? Because here's where I'm struggling, or here's the challenges I'm running into. And if we step back even bigger than this on a global level, Stuart, I mean, this is the most collective change as a human race we've ever gone through. And I remind people, there's no answer book in this. So this sense of I have to figure it out alone, or this sense of imposterism that we used to fight all the time, it's gone, right? I mean, on day one of the pandemic, when I jumped into my work that day, or you jumped into your work that day, there was a sense of, well, we've never been here before, but I'm going to put one foot in front of the other, and I'm going to do the best I can with the most I know, with the help I have. And then I'm going to get up tomorrow and I'm going to repeat that. And I'm probably going to learn a great deal between yesterday and the next day, but I reserve the right to get smarter, and I reserve the right to pick up the phone and phone a friend. So I think some of this is naming that. And then there's a piece around other tactics I've helped leaders talk through this year, which is around, you know, mindfulness-based stress reduction. There's a lot of topic and conversation these days around mindfulness and meditation and yoga. These are things that were not really in the top of the agenda before. I'm excited they are now. I'm excited that there are many people starting conversations around mental wellness and health and well-being. Because let's be honest, if you're worried about your family and putting food on the table, or those you love, or your community, or even your own physical mental health, you're not actually showing up to any task or any job or any challenge the best you can. And so my belief is really, if you can help people not feel so alone in this and give them some tactics and techniques to work through some of that anxiety that we're all facing, then they can make some good decisions for themselves and their businesses.
Yeah. Taking us a bit of a different tact here, Bill. Like, and I'm conscious this is a question I'm throwing at you before, and not what we prepared for. But I was listening to a podcast. Tim Ferriss was interviewing this week Jim Collins. For everyone who doesn't know Jim Collins, he wrote the book Good to Great, and Tim asked him the importance of really good questions. And I thought I'd ask you this question, Bill: is through any change process, how important is asking the right questions to actually figure out what we need to change? And Jim goes and talks about sort of the facilitation he does with companies about, you know, strategy and all that sort of stuff. And he talks about this principle of a truth or an opinion, saying we are only going to be talking about what is true here. But through processes of change, and I know that this can be hard when we've got to make change and decisions quickly because of, you know, financial pressures, whatever it might be. But how important is asking really good questions and actually understanding what is at the heart of what we need to change here in a business?
You know, I actually think questions are the new currency, Stuart. I think what Jim Collins and Tim Ferriss are talking about is pretty paramount. And the reason I say that is because the answers that we've had in the past, frankly, got us to where we're at today. And we can't use those same responses and answers to solve our way out of something we've never encountered before. So I do believe that questions is the new currency. I'll share with you a story that that I've told a few times with some younger generations of folks. And, you know, in my line of work, I do IT consulting, and there's a lot of young, talented people that come into IT consulting because they are really charged to want to solve problems and help people. And I ask them sort of, what does success look like to them? And a lot of times the answer is, well, success to me looks like this many answers that I've given to a client or to a business, or this many problems that I've solved. And I encourage them to actually think about it a little bit differently. And this comes with wisdom and years of experience, but I hope they get there too. And I say to them, actually, success to me looks like a client realizing that there was a question in their head that they didn't know they had. And so what's really interesting is I've left them in a place where they have more questions than they do answers. And that, to some on the surface, might frustrate people because they'd say, well, how is that value that you're bringing to your clients? Well, I believe it is value because it's surfacing a question they didn't know they had, which means they're thinking in a different way. It means neuroplasticity. It means they're connecting the dots in their brain or in their organization or in their business in a way they hadn't thought about before. And sometimes I call it implications thinking, you know, thinking that sort of step one, step two, step 12, right? We have to think this way. This is what all businesses, what a lot of your listeners are doing now, and small businesses especially. You can't just come up with plan A and plan B. I mean, maybe it's the military background that I have as an Army officer. I was always trying to plan for what if. If this happens, then what? If this happens, then what? And what you find is you actually end up kind of exercising a neuroplasticity in your brain a little bit that allows you to be resilient and allows you to be open to all possibilities. And I think the other thing is it enables you to not be so thrown off your game a little bit. Yeah. And so to me, that's where I reside, in a place of curiosity and questions being truly the new currency. But I know it's a mindset shift, right? We all went to school, we went to uni, we went to all these places that told us you have to get it right. Yeah. And I'm not saying throw all that out. What I'm saying is use that to help you get into a place where you are more comfortable with the questions that you didn't even know you had, or that have never been asked in a room before, or maybe have never been posed in front of a board before. That might actually be closer to a solution that is lasting for your customers and your community.
So does that highlight I guess, Bill, the importance of, you know, any change process that you might be looking at, or a change you're making in your business, whatever it is, that the importance of getting a really, like a rounded view, whether it's input from your staff, input maybe from customers, maybe it's from some advisors or mentors. But what you're saying there, I guess, is, you know, making sure you've looked at every kind of angle is going to be really important, and you're not going to be necessarily the best person to look at it at the problem every angle.
Yeah, I mean, this is where it goes down to, if you've read a lot about human-centered design thinking, right, or asking your customers for input. This is why it's so important to get as much diverse perspective as you can when you're trying to solve a problem, because the nature of it is, from where I sit, I see it one way. From where you sit, Stuart, you see it another way. And it doesn't mean I'm right and you're wrong, or you're right and I'm wrong. What it means is, what if we actually put all of those perspectives together? We probably get a wider lens and maybe see a potential option or solution that otherwise we'd be blind to. So this is where things like inclusion and diversity of thought and opinion and perspective and upbringing and socioeconomic challenges, this is where all of this comes in. And this is where the power of the internet is, right? Like, taking something and almost, you know, if you do that sort of beta testing, you know, A-B testing, you put this out there and say to people, hey, how does this feel? You put this out there, how does this feel? You can do that in a way today in a much faster response and get some very valuable data. But I would also argue the even more valuable data are, what are the questions that come from that? Which is, people might say, what if we did this? Or why is this missing? Or I can't find that. That's the treasure. Because none of us, right, we all use approximately about 10% of our brain at any given time that I know of. I mean, hopefully in the future we can change that. So if you think about it, we're not really using it to our max capacity. But if we throw a bunch of people together with that capacity in all different angles, I'd argue that we'd surface some more interesting things for innovation.
On your bio, Bill, one of the things you that is touched on there is, it's the importance of vision and value through any change process. Now, again, you know, we've been through a year when, you know, quick changes have had to make, decisions have had to be made on the sort of fly a little bit to a degree. But how, you know, going into 2021, you know, it's a time for people to reflect and sort of plan out their next year, especially here in New Zealand when we all sort of go to the beach for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, business owners having time to sit down, is, Talk to us about why vision and values for any organization is really, really important.
Yeah, this is an area I spend a lot of my time with clients and businesses, Stuart. And the reason I do is because any strategy that an organization takes on, or any transformation that an organization takes on, a lot of times we get very excited about the technology or the platform or the enabler that's going to help you get there. And an analogy or kind of metaphor I like to remind people of is, and I'll go with, you know, the fact that you guys are coming up on a couple weeks vacation, right, in New Zealand, and you talked about how people are excited to go to the beach. Well, usually what I tell people in some of my workshops is, imagine if you're going to bring your family on a vacation, right, on a summer vacation, and everybody's all excited for this, and you say, we're going to go to the beach. And that's all you've said, right? And you think everybody's got the common vision about what 2 weeks at the beach looks like. Well, you know, maybe for you, Stuart, it's I want to sit in the sand, drink a beer, and read a book, yeah, right? Well, maybe for your eldest child, or, you know, son or daughter, it's I want to stay inside and go to the spa. Maybe for your wife or spouse, it's I'd like to go shopping. And so you can see what I'm saying here is, like, everybody says we're going to the beach. You think you all have a common vision, but when you get there, what does success look like? What does a good vacation look like? It's all a slightly different variation. And if you bring that back to an organization that's going 100 million miles an hour in any sort of change, what you start to get is what I call these slight vectors. Again, going back to the military analogy, if you have two planes taking off from the same point of origin and you have them on slightly different degrees, but they're going the speed they're going at, it won't be long before they're in completely different hemispheres. So when I say why vision is really important, it's gathering people together before they leave that point of origin or before they go on that vacation to really understand what is the picture that's in your head for what a good, you know, vacation looks like, or what is the picture in your head individually for what a CRM, you know, implementation looks like. Because until you state it, you know, paint it or talk about it in some way, we're never going to know those slight variations. And more importantly, we're never going to be able to come together to paint a common picture. Now, I'm not saying everybody has to have the same one, but you do need to have the conversation about it. Because otherwise, in the family analogy, you're going to have a miserable vacation, right? After 2 weeks, you're going to get home and you're going to say, why was everybody fighting? And why couldn't we agree on anything? And so spending that time up front and saying, let's have a common vision and what this looks like. And then more importantly, what do we value in that, yep. right? What are the things that are most important to me? And organizations oftentimes skip this step, Stuart. That's why it's so important yep. for me to do the work with people, to say, I know this seems like extraneous amount of investment here, but I'm telling you, time now will save you buckets and buckets and barrels yep. of money later if you talk about it. And value can be things like, how does it make me feel? But it can also be like metrics. What's the amount of money that we want to save on this investment? What's the experience we want to create for our customers? What's the experience we want to create for our employees? Those are all values, yeah. and you can put some numbers around that. So in a nutshell, that's why it's so important to me to spend the time in the space of vision and value, because any journey that you set out on, if you don't talk about those two things, you're at risk of finding yourself in a completely different hemisphere, or even worse, everyone around you is going to be miserable and you'll be infighting.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we talk a lot about this, Bill, with our customers, and the fact that, you know, as business owners, small business owners, the vision of your business is not just the business, it's also what it means for you personally. And that's not yeah. necessarily just financial. It could be time. It could be a number of things that you have a vision for in your life, whether it's retirement, putting the kids through university, whatever it might be. But if it's not clear what that is, like we had a story last week from one of our partners who met a new client, and it was a husband and wife owned a business. And the first question that they sort of started, or discussion point, was on the exit strategy from the business. And the husband went, oh, probably about 10 years. And the wife went, oh, no, 5 years. And he was like, oh, I guess it's 5 years then. So, and the partner was like, you obviously haven't had this chat before. They were like, no, we've not had. Right. So it's, you know, that's a very simple example, but again, vision of what, you know, as a couple they see from the business and what they want to achieve in their life was still a little bit off. They both wanted to exit, but the timing was, but it's a right. simple example what you say. If the vision's not aligned, there could be problems.
Right. And that example, which is great about that example, that's a lot less runway. 5 years versus 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Think about that. I mean, how much runway do you have, and what's the plane you're trying to take off or land? You know, you're not going to land a 747 on a runway that is meant for a Cessna. It's just not going to happen. So you should yep. be talking at least common timelines, runways, all of these things. It's important. And oftentimes when I lead these workshops with organizations, most of these organizations, to be clear, they have a corporate strategy. Their board is signed off on it. People have bought into sort of the big picture. So it's not like we have to go redo that strategy. What I'm asking them is, have you all had conversations as leaders about what that strategy looks like in your own head? Have you actually yep. said that out loud to your peers, to your team, to those that you lead? And most of the time, people haven't. Not because they don't want to, Stuart, but because they're so busy. They haven't yep. actually had the time. This goes back to what we were saying before. As a leader, I think it's just as important that you carve out time to reflect, like really, yep. really reflect on this stuff. You know, sometimes you can take a strategy and say, it makes sense to me on paper, but let me go walk with it for a while. Let me go walk by the water and think about. And new insights will come to you. It's just as important that you can echo that or say it in your own words to the teams you lead, because that's where you can paint a picture for them that they're like, I see myself in that strategy. It's important for people to connect the dots and see themselves in any strategy, in any vision, to feel valuable.
Yeah, yeah. Going on to a different theme here, Bill, is the pandemic has done a number of things. Obviously, there's the disruption it's caused the world from an economic point of view of lockdowns and all that sort of stuff and no travel. But it has also accelerated trends which were, you know, maybe 5 years away, 10 years. There's lots of discussion around that at the moment. You know, we've got plenty of examples here, especially in Auckland, of the work from home movement really getting accelerated. There's, you know, major corporations reducing their office space because more people want to work home, and that the office space is more becoming a collaboration hub rather than the place you go to work, if that sense. And that, you know, and you can just translate that into the transition into e-commerce. You know, through into next year, as people start to grapple with their vision and what they want to achieve and the change they might have to go, how do they identify what might be something that is short-term pandemic related versus what is a long-term, actually this is now the world will be moving towards and I need to adapt, thinking my business may change because of what is now a buying trend that might be how customers want to interact?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the million-dollar question on everybody's mind these days, right, Stuart? Yeah. There are many organizations trying to figure this out right now as they lock in their budgets for 2021. And I think it's important to name the fact that this year's budgeting exercise for all organizations was something they've never done before. You could not dust off last year's budget, move some numbers around and say, here's our 2021 budget. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't going to work. Mm. So it required people to do the really deep thinking around the question you just asked. And I think it's going to be challenging to say, here's a crystal ball as to what it looks like. But I do think there are some trends that we can rely on. And I'll name a few of those. First one being, and I think you may have even named this on a previous episode that you've been on. It's just commerce now. It's not e-commerce. Yes. Right? Like it's just commerce. So drop the E, right? Like we're at a place where it's the way that business is happening. So I'm excited by the fact that there are a number of businesses who, whether they were hovering at the whole, do we move on to an e-commerce platform? Do we move ourselves into a place where we can do online ordering? Everybody's made that shift. You know, the CEO of Microsoft said last year, as a reminder to everyone, if you're really exhausted, personally, professionally, as a business owner, as a leader, as an employee, it's understandable because we've essentially done 2 years worth of digital transformation in a 2 month period. And those listening, remember back to March, remember back to April, right? Remember how much we were saying, oh yeah, there's that thing called Zoom. I think I have an account for that. Microsoft Teams. I remember logging into that once. And now you close your eyes, you can't imagine really starting your day without it. So there's aspects where I think it's important to remember that we've done leaps and bounds of what was years worth of work. And in my space, it's interesting because honestly, there were projects and contracts I was on, Stuart, where the runway we had for digital transformation projects for banks and for financial institutions, these were multi-year projects. And they were things like, how do you install Microsoft Teams and get people using it? Well, imagine how they felt and we felt when overnight they had to figure that out, right? Or just for survival. So then the question becomes, well now where do I spend my time? We were going to work on this for 2 to 3 years. The good news, I think, is we're spending our time on much more valuable work. And that sense is not so much, did you turn on the tool, but more importantly, how are you using the tool to optimize what you need to achieve? So it's really pushing the boundaries and the limits of the technology that you've already invested in to work really well for what you want to achieve. And that brings up your point around the office. What is going to happen to offices, to downtown offices? I'm coming to you from downtown Seattle today. It looks very, very different than it did last year. Mm. Commercial real estate downtown is pretty much empty. Do I envision going back to an office post-vaccine? Yes, but my allocation of time is going to be very different. In my world, I spent four days a week on a client site before. And what that meant was I was in the space of the client working with them side by side. It's likely that client will say, hey, two things. One, we don't necessarily need you here as much because we need to make sure, you know, they're doing their own vaccine stuff. And two, we did about 90% of the work we typically do in person. We're doing it over remote. There are limitations, but we're being creative about that. So the question then becomes, where do I spend my time? And I think offices will become, like you said, I will go there when I need the in-person inspiration, the energy that you just cannot replicate in this fashion that we're in now. I will do that for when I need that. But interestingly enough, working from home for me and for some others, I've actually found myself to be far more productive. Now, why is that? Maybe because there's less interruptions. For me, it's primarily because I'm not spending time on airplanes, in hotels, in the back of Ubers, these are all places we said we could get work done. And yes, you could get work done, but it wasn't my optimal work because for me, I need time to reflect. I need time to create. I need time to walk around in the work that I'm doing. And this has given me more of that, even in a pandemic. So I think there's so much for us to learn. And then the last thing I would say is specifically around business models and finance. If you think about how money is moving in this pandemic, there are distributed ledger discussions. There are people doing a lot more Venmo and Stripe and all these other ways of kind of getting money to places and people for the way you need to. I work with a lot of banks, and there are a lot of banks buying fintech companies because they're realizing if we don't get into the fintech space, we may be out of business in the next 5 to 10 years. And to me, that's fascinating because it's causing people to think about something that is innately emotional, money, right? And taking back that aspect of how do I stay in control of it? How do I put it where I trust it? How do I enable it to go to communities, small business owners, entrepreneurs, where I want it to go to without a lot of the middleman? And that's something that I think we're going to see a lot more of going forward.
And we, in one of our previous episodes, we had Craig Hudson, who's the MD for New Zealand for Xero, the sort of New Zealand, one of our, I guess, poster childs of tech firms. And they talked a lot about that through lockdown and especially that, March to sort of April, May sort of period, that what they found through their data is that clients who were using the Xero platform a lot, keeping it up to date, also had like an add-on product, whether that was a project management tool for their work or job management tool, say if they're a tradie or in construction or, whether it's sort of a point of sale add-on if you're retail, but like Shopify as well can add into Xero. But what they found was that clients that had that rounded picture of their business, had good data to make decisions, were better prepared and actually came out a lot stronger from the pandemic. And we saw that, personally working with clients where they didn't have a good sense of how business was operating. It became very tough. And I guess what you're sort of saying there, believe it doesn't matter how big or small your business is, but using technology, you've got to utilize it to the most efficiency, but that's also so you can make good decisions on, and back to what Jim Collins said, what's the facts, not what's my gut instinct saying to me.
Right. Yeah. And I think there's a piece here around the power of cloud, frankly. I mean, it enables you to move faster, but I also think it gives you much more data to work with, to your point. There's this aspect of should we do this or shouldn't we do this? And the question I always ask is, what are the data? Like, show me the data. And sometimes in change management in my world, there isn't, it can be pretty, subjective. People say, well, how do we track that? I don't necessarily let that just be where the question ends. I encourage people to be creative and innovative about how we do track some things around sentiment, around trends, around trust. These are all things that I think are barometers for how you should make decisions. And more importantly, how you should change a decision. Because if you make a decision and you don't look at the data along the way, again, you can find yourself pretty far down a path and realize it's not where we hoped to be. And the question I then ask is, did you check along the way? Did you pulse your customers? Did you pulse your employees? Did you ask others? And I think it's important to remind people that data are your friends. Don't be afraid of them. And it's important that you get a strategy ahead of that so that you can make it work for you instead of you working for it all the time.
Yep. Through our sort of prep for this, Bill, you talked about this concept of preparing people to become, in this sense, business owners becoming their own change agent, and how you can stay composed as a business owner through the period of change. How we can deal with adversity was one thing. So, talk, Bill, about your thoughts. How do people and business owners, but get more prepared for change and I guess become that change agent you talked about? Because I think one thing, what we've touched on is, yes, the pandemic has caused a lot of change in businesses, but these trends that we're seeing around commerce, not e-commerce, and all that sort of thing is, the world now is changing at a constant speed and only going to get faster. So how do people start to become more of a, prepared to deal with change and their own change agent, I guess is the question.
Yeah. I think it starts, Stuart, in a place of curiosity. And I like to remind people that, you know, when we were children, if you can recall, when you moved through the world as a child, you looked at the world through a new pair of eyes, right? And I encourage people listening, the next time you're out and you see a child maybe in a public space or on a playground or even something in a restaurant, just for a moment, remember and kind of watch them and see how it is that they take in the world. And what's fascinating is they take it in from this place of everything is kind of this day zero, right? It's a new beginning and I'm learning. I wrote a blog a number of years ago about the challenge that I put upon myself, which is try and approach change through the eyes of a beginner, through the eyes of childlike wonder. And inherently in us is that curiosity. It's that human curiosity. Mm. The challenge is, if we think about how far we've gotten away from school and into uni and into business and into like, that was not always rewarded. We would grasp for certainty. We would run away from curiosity. And I think to be a really good, healthy, well-rounded change agent, you should approach things from a place of curiosity and ask questions about, I wonder, start with I wonder, or what if, or might we? And some of this goes, again, back to that human-centered design thinking. And if you can afford yourself the opportunity to do that, then what's really interesting is, and I think inherently your blood pressure lowers a little bit. Things seem a little bit more playful, and you don't put this burden on yourself to get it right and get it perfect every time. And that, I think, then allows you to consider all different options. And what's really interesting is when you do that, you as an individual, as a human being, you kind of generate a different frequency, a different aura, if you will, and others around you pick up on that. Yeah. So it's really important as a change agent, as a leader, if you're faced, and we are all faced with the change that we've never imagined before, if you can come at it from a place of, and I'm going to say composed, maybe that's not the right word, but allow yourself to take a couple deep breaths in, a couple deep breaths out, think about what can I learn from this moment? What can I be curious about in this moment? You'll present differently, and others around you will then feel calmer. And I think, as we've seen on the global stage, right? I'm gonna give New Zealand a huge recognition here. Your leader and leaders demonstrated the power of composed, poignant thinking and policies, and other leaders, maybe the leader in my country, not so much. And we can see the difference between the population behaviors and the what is promising versus what is peril. I think all of that comes down to the way that a leader or a person shows up as a change agent. How do I face this change? How do I lead in this change? How do I stay healthy in these changes? These are all questions that people really should be thinking about personally, regardless of how big or small an organization they lead. There are eyes on you. There are always eyes on you. And you can model that, but it requires you to go and do your inner work first.
Yep. Just taking that a step further, Bill, I guess in your experience, the impact you have as a leader, and for all business owners out there, I hate to tell you are leaders. You might not have realized that yet, but you are. Is that talk that word around composure, the impact you have? You know, have you got, I guess, examples or whatever when that, you know, a leader has sort of really led from the front, kept, you know, really, I guess, focused on the vision, taking people towards it versus the complete opposite where it's a bit, you know, they're a bit stressed or whatever. What's the impact that's had on whether it's a project or that change that business has had? Because I think it's a really important part that, you know, as a leader, if you're calm, your people are calm. And it sounds so simple, but the impact you have is a huge, it's got huge gravitas, I guess, over the whole change process in the business.
Yeah, I actually have an example that comes to mind that's specifically around, and I think some of your listeners might enjoy this story. Here in the United States, we had obviously a lot of money that was put through the payroll protection program. By August, I think $525 billion had been dispersed to small businesses, and a lot of people had read about that. We had an opportunity at my firm to work with a lot of banks and financial institutions to help them essentially figure out how are we going to enable some of these small business owners to get these loans. Well, as you can imagine, the Small Business Administration, which is an arm of the U.S. government, which is responsible for issuing out those loans, the process that it normally took to get that started was something like this. Go to the SBA.gov website, pull down a PDF, fill out the PDF, scan the PDF, email the PDF, it goes in and it goes into a void, and you may not hear about it for a while. So you can imagine it's quite manual. Well, through the curiosity and wonderment and frankly composition of a couple of leaders of some of these banks and technology partners, they said, what if we stood up a portal, a customer-facing portal, that allowed the customer to type in the same information that they would handwrite or type into a PDF into this portal? That information was then put, and this was all people just wondering at this point. That information was then put into what is essentially an automation or a bot. The bot took that information and transcribed it and put it directly into the government database on a much faster and much more accurate pace. Imagine if we could do that, then we could get the approval and the funds into the small business owners faster, right? All wonderful in implementation. Here's what's really interesting, what happened, Stuart. All that got put in place within a matter of days, right? This is all great people putting this together. However, because the bots worked so fast and so accurate in putting information into the SBA government database, they thought they were being hacked. They thought they were being attacked. So the government at the time took a very, I would almost say, antiquated approach to this and said, we must shut all this down. And that put a lot of leaders, a lot of banks, a lot of people who are trying to get the loans into the hands of people in a state of probably near panic, right? Because we had all this happening and all of a sudden it came to a screeching halt. And you're now back to where, you know, Bill, the analyst, has to type in all of the information on an application, oftentimes generating errors and slowing down. Yeah. And you can imagine the backup, right? Well, there were lots of leaders who realized this could have been a panic moment. Luckily, we got to work with a lot of people and say, this is an opportunity to, in a composed way, say, here's the challenge we've run into. How do we put together a response that can go to a senator or a congressman that explains to them why they need to talk to this other part of the business and say, these are not hackers. These are bots that have been designed to expedite and keep more accurate the process of these loans being generated. Please allow these ports, if you will, to be open. And all of that had to happen in a way where if you as a leader felt like, oh gosh, we've now been shut down, all of this was for nothing, you throw your hands up, it could really have frustrated a lot of people and you could have lost a lot of people in the process. Instead, there were handfuls of people that said, okay, I didn't expect this, but what can we do? And I think that's where leaders who set themselves apart said, we have an opportunity here to engage the government differently as a private entity, to ask permission of our congressperson, our representative, to say, you can help us here. And here's what we see. What do you see? And ultimately, they got to a place where that happened. But there were a lot of things learned in that process, Stuart. A lot of things learned in that process. And I think similarly, the policies were changing on a day-to-day basis. Hour by hour, these policies were changing.
Yep.
And so you as a leader could get really frustrated thinking, wait, we just told all our customers this is the policy and now it's changed. I think patience was used a lot. And I think honesty and transparency with customers made a real difference here to say, we've never done this before. Yeah. There are databases that the government's using that are 30 plus years old. It's not the same. You know, we're putting stuff in the cloud and then we're trying to plug it back into, you know, a COBOL database. It's not gonna work one for one. So there were a lot of things we learned, and those leaders who took those learnings stayed composed and realized, hey, we now know more than we did yesterday. Let's continue to march into tomorrow with that knowledge. They did quite well. So that's a story I wanted to share, if that helps in understanding kind of the enormity of this change and those that frankly could have laid down and said, I give up. I don't know how to do
it. It's just too hard.
And on paper, it looked really hard, right? Yeah. Like we ran into a brick wall. But we had to stop and say, what can we learn from this? How can we keep going? And more importantly, who do we call to ask for help?
Correct. That's awesome. Just final discussion point, Bill, and is you talked about the internet previously, and the internet is, you know, it's got its good and bad sides in the sense that there is a lot of information out there and there's more resources to help business owners and people in business and leaders to, you know, look at problems, get ideas and connect with other people. You know, and I guess especially in your space and technology where, you know, that mountain of information is overwhelming at some stage. So how do you make good decisions, make sure you're connecting with people that know, you know, that have got some credibility, can help with problems, whether that's advisors, suppliers, whatever it might be, when there is so much out there? How do you sift through this to actually get some really good resourcing to help you through change process?
It's a very timely question, Stuart. And I will acknowledge that one of the outcomes of this pandemic has been people have spent a lot more time on things like LinkedIn, on things like Facebook, on things like Twitter. And that's because people, it's become their outlet. It's become the way that they engage. I think it's actually some positives to it because we're seeing a lot more solopreneurs and entrepreneurs that are jumping into the space and getting on platforms like Kajabi or Wix or whatever, like, and being able to start their own business, if you will, without a lot of cost of entry. That said, it's very busy. And there's a lot of people who are saying, you know, join me for this or join my Zoom session for that. And
yeah,
and it becomes quite saturated quite quickly. I remember in March and April, there was that sense of what do I do with my time? And you thought, well, I need to sign up for a master's class in something, right? Or whether people were making sourdough bread, or there was a lot of those trends happening. And it's sort of this it's this human tension that we have, which is I don't want to be left behind, or I don't want to not be in consumption of the latest and greatest knowledge. And I would challenge listeners to say, to the best of your ability, when that tendency comes up or that tension comes up, sit with it for a while. Don't act right away. And I think it's important to sit with it because you need to investigate why it's presenting tension in you. So if somebody's offering a coaching course on something and says it's the thing that you need because of, maybe it is and maybe it's not. But I would encourage people to really kind of sit with it and say, what do I hope to get out of this? And to the best of your ability, resist the urgency to answer something that says, you know, on sale for one day only. Because you know what? There will be another opportunity. It's not truly, it's not one day only. And if it's too good to be true, chances are it's too good to be true. So, and the other piece I would share is understand that as citizens and consumers, the power lies in your hands. So yes, there are people putting products out there and opportunities out there. But you as a buyer, as a person who is investing your time and energy into something, really the power is yours. And I don't want people to give that power away, especially in times that we're in right now. Because time is a currency and it's the only currency that you can't get back. Yep. So if you're a small business owner or you're, you know, a large business owner and you're saying to yourself, I hope I get this much out of this offer or this course or whatnot. If you don't feel like you are, pull back. And more importantly, as you think about the holidays, Stuart, you know, people are going to the holidays. We're here in our holidays as well. And I'm taking, you know, most of December off. I think it's really important that people kind of turn on the mute channel or, you know, tune it out for a bit, because the stuff that's truly meant to find you will find you. The stuff that you really need to grow your business, it will be there. Mm-hmm. Some of these fly-by-night opportunities where people are just scrambling and busy and trying to get attention and trying to get clicks, beware of those, because they probably won't be around for a while once everything gets either back to or becomes the new next. It's going to be interesting to see what the new class of solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, startups look like. I think it's important that people really take stock of what excites them and what they want to put their time and energy towards, because those are the things that you should be protecting, is your time and energy.
Yep. As Warren Buffett said, I can buy lots of things, but I can't buy time. So yeah, it's a good way to finish up, actually.
Yeah. And I think somebody said, maybe it's the Irish in me, but you can't take a U-Haul with you to heaven or something like that. Like you don't see people pulling a trailer behind a hearse is what they always used to say. So, yeah. So remember what's important in life and spend your time there.
Awesome. Bill, is there any, that's final sort of points. Is there anything sort of final messages or points we've not covered?
You know, I would just say to folks, look, this is a very tough time. It continues to be a tough time. Be kind to yourself. There's a lot of compassion that people are offering to other people in their everyday encounters and existence. To your listeners, to you, Stuart, remember to afford yourself some of the same compassion. It can be really, really hard to kind of turn that back on ourselves and be kind to ourselves. But it's really important that you do that as a leader and as a citizen in a community, because you really can't help anybody if you're not rejuvenated and restored yourself. So, you know, take good care of yourself in these holiday times. And if anyone wants to reach out in the future, I'm happy to chat.
Awesome. And we'll put sort of some contact details for us and stuff. So if people want to contact, we can connect you with Bill. But Bill, thanks very much for your time coming from Seattle.
Yeah.
We wish you and your family a great Christmas, thank you. Especially in these trying times, and stay safe and look after you. But thanks very much, Bill.
Thanks, Stuart. Appreciate it.